Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. All of a sudden, your long wait on the DMV line or at the post office, it might become a little more tolerable. A team of psychologists from York University in the very exciting country of Canada recently published a survey of studies on boredom that suggests there may be a way to end those feelings of tedium. Maria Konnikova is a journalist who wrote about this study for the Boston Globe, and she joins me now to explain why we get bored and what to do about it. Hello, Maria.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So walk me through the methodology on how you actually begin to study boredom.
So boredom is this topic that has been incredibly interesting to people for a long time, but until now, it's been very amorphous. You know, what does it actually mean to be bored? And so what this team of researchers did was to take studies that mentioned boredom and see, is there some underlying mechanism to it? And they realized that it centered on attention, that all of these were somehow related to how we engage or don't engage our attention with whatever we have in the environment. And so it's not just a problem within us, and it's not just a problem in the environment. It's kind of an interaction of the two. What can we do with what we have in front of us?
And so, you know, I think this is the sort of theory that people come up with without having to be led to it, that as more and more devices compete for our attention, maybe some people would say boredom dies. Maybe some people would say that that leads to boredom because you have to have your attention span gets shorter. It's easier to become bored. What do the studies show?
The studies actually show that it's the latter, that having this proliferation of devices makes us more prone to boredom because we are not as used to paying attention to one thing all the time. And so this multitasking environment makes us unable to deal with boredom when suddenly we don't have all of these things in front of us. And it also makes us much more prone to distraction. And one of the things that's been shown to lead to boredom is distraction. When our attention is distracted and we can't engage, we tend to get bored.
So we yearn for something more exciting. We know that there's something out there.
Exactly. We think that, you know, hey, maybe the reason I'm not able to engage with this is because it's boring. It's not a problem with my attention. It's a problem with what is in front of me.
Right. This is my problem with Sirius satellite radio. There might be a better song somewhere. And back when there was only one radio station in town, you know, some Donna Summer song would do the trick, and now it doesn't. So take me through, but how do you study boredom in a lab? How do you create the circumstances of boredom?
Well, one of the ways that people are doing it right now is take away all your devices. Let's put you in a room where there's nothing to do. I'm going to have you sit in a chair in an empty room for 15 minutes, and I'm going to see what you do. And you might think that it's actually easy to distract yourself. You can daydream, you can think about things, you can plan out the day. There are so many things you can do even if you don't have anything. And yet the studies are showing that these people don't know how to deal with it. They're frustrated, they're angry, they just want their phone. They want something. They can't deal with not having anything in the environment. We've become incapable of self-engaging with our own minds, and we can't deal with the quiet. So that's one way of studying it.
Now, a question for you listeners, if you're still paying attention and haven't dozed off in this conversation, why would you? Maria's been very engaging, I have to say. We'd love to hear everyone's tips for combating boredom or your thoughts on boredom. I think there might be a value to it, and some studies have shown that. Our number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You know, I have this other study that predated the one that you wrote about, and it's the headline in this New York Times article is, "You're bored, but your brain is tuned in." Talks about the value of boredom. Mm-hmm. Talks about it as a respite from all this other stuff you're talking about, a way to organize your thoughts. In fact, it could be recognized as a legitimate human emotion that can be central to learning and creativity. Are we overly scared of boredom? Maybe we should embrace it and it would help us.
Absolutely. I think there's actually a lot of value to that. But I think there's actually a contradiction in the sense that if we're able to embrace boredom and use it constructively, we're no longer bored. So we're only actually feeling bored when we don't know what to do with our minds. I think that boredom in the sense of downtime and not really having anything to distract you is incredibly valuable. Actually, in 1989, Joseph Brodsky wrote about this and gave a commencement address at Dartmouth College called In Praise of Boredom, where he said, you know, this is one of the things that's going to happen to you in life. You are going to get bored. And so you might as well embrace it and learn how to use it constructively. But it's very hard to do that when we're saying, oh, I'm so bored. You're so busy feeling bad for yourself and feeling bored that you forget that you can actually just kind of relax and allow yourself to be bored. And that might ironically be the way out of boredom. If you stop thrashing around and you actually kind of let yourself embrace it, then you might find that you're no longer bored.
I used to always preach that boring people are more easily bored, that people who are have great interests and can make connections between things will find ways to find interest in something that maybe isn't full of bells and whistles. And I used to say that, and then I sat down and watched the movie The Tree of Life, and I began to question that assumption. Let's take Jessica from Glen Ridge. Hello, Jessica. You're on WNYC.
Hi.
Hi. What are your feelings on boredom?
Well, I have two children, two daughters, and just like cursing is not allowed in my house, the words "I'm bored" have never been allowed. Those are considered bad words. And my feeling is sort of like, you know, in Forrest Gump, that boring is as boring does. And so my kids have always been challenged to find interest in the world around them. And also they've both grown up learning some mindfulness meditation.
Uh-huh.
So there's nothing to do. You don't have a phone or a good book to read. You can watch your breath. So there's always something to pay attention to.
See, I'm glad you said that. That the reason I'm bored isn't allowed in your home isn't so, you know, you hop on an iPad or an Xbox the second you're bored. But could we tap into your motherly insights, Jessica? We'll all be your children for a second. Give us one of these meditation tips beyond watch your breath.
So you can do a five senses meditation where you just close your eyes and you listen to the sounds around you. You just really tune in to what you're hearing, because when you're quiet, you know, you can hear things. You might hear the birds outside. You might hear the cars go by. You can open your eyes and just really, list all the things that you can see right this minute, right in front of you, wherever you are. What are you smelling? What do you feel on your skin? What is the air temperature like? So, you know, you just really crystallize your awareness of the moment.
That's awesome. And once you get done through all those five senses, there's the Xbox right there. Thanks, Jessica.
All right. You're welcome. Have a great day.
Emily is a teacher from Port Washington. Hello.
I am.
Hello. Go ahead. What are your boredom techniques, or what do your kids
say? Well, I just want to say yay to Jessica. I wish she were the mother of the children I teach, because clearly the majority of the children that we see as teachers now expect us to make them on board. They expect us to give them all the excitement. They don't know how to just sit quietly and focus and just, as Jessica said, take in. So if we don't give a lesson that's not, you know, multidimensional and you know, every single thing going on at the same time, oh, this is so boring, you're just reading a book.
Yeah.
But how
long have you been teaching, Emily?
Oh, a long time. I mean, long enough to see it change, and I also have a grown daughter.
That was my question. It really has changed? Kids are more easily bored now?
I want to say in the last 5-7 years, dramatically changed. I don't want to say it's just because we put videos in cars and videos at the post office and everywhere. There's something going on at all times for eyes to go and ears to hear, but I see a tremendous difference. And it's not just, you know, as we say, oh, they have ADHD. We don't teach our children to just sit still.
All right. Thank you very much, Emily. Maria, what would the study say about what Jessica and Emily were talking about there?
You know, I think what Jessica was talking about is actually incredibly important, because mindfulness meditation has been tied to attention. People who are trained in these techniques are better able to concentrate and learn how to really engage their attentional resources much more effectively. And so this is actually a proven way to become more focused, to become more aware, and also to be happier. It actually makes you a more positive and a happier person. And I have to say that it also doesn't have to be a sensory or kind of a breath meditation. Meditation really is about just quieting your mind and learning how to just focus on one thing and let other thoughts go away. And so it's just, I think it's a way of training your attention.
It does seem, though, that if I have thoughts flitting through my head, all trying to gain my attention, that wouldn't be boring. that maybe what would be boring is, you know, not to be able to get off one thought. But you're saying that it's not. You're saying that not being able to quiet your mind is destructive.
Right. It's actually counterintuitive because when your mind is wandering, when you have lots of things competing for your attention, you're actually not very happy. There's actually work that was done by Daniel Gilbert at Harvard that shows that a mind that wanders is not a happy mind. So when our minds are going from thing to thing and aren't in the moment, we actually tend to be more unhappy than we otherwise would be.
Rob from Rigo Park. Hello, Rob. You're on WNYC.
Hi. How are you today? Great show. You know, this is perfect fitting because I read an ancient scripture today written thousands of years ago, and you should understand that your true self is not dualistic, is not an object. For example, a podium is an object, but the word Om is your true self, which is not an object, which is pure consciousness. That only when you experience your own pure consciousness will you transcend boredom, which is dualistic.
And the ancient text said that, did it?
This is the Vedas, written thousands of years ago, and the very foundation of all psychology is the scriptures of the Vedas.
Thank you very much, Rob. I feel elevated, although I don't know if I actually comprehend all that. You know, there was an interesting one of the interesting studies you write about was a Bond University psychologist named Cynthia Fisher, and she made participants listen to a conversation while doing a bunch of different tasks. What did she learn?
So she learned that actually it's not inherently distracting to have a conversation. It's not necessarily going to make us bored. What matters is how interesting is the task and how interesting is the conversation. So if you're doing something that is actually very simple and doesn't require a lot of your attention, it's hard to be engaged in it. And so you're likely to be bored. And in that sense, a distracting conversation is actually going to be great. You're going to be like, oh my God, this is awesome. I can listen to this conversation. And you're then not going to be bored because you have something distracting you. But if you don't have that conversation, that's the only time that you're actually going to be bored. When you have a task that requires your attention, that requires vigilance, we're not very good at that type of thing. We tend to get bored, but it actually requires too many attentional resources. And so the conversation will then be distracting and you will be bored.
So the insight there, how should we use that insight to shape our behavior so as not to be bored?
We should be very mindful of what's going on in the environment, so that we can attribute our boredom to the right cause. Because the second that we're aware of where the distraction is coming from, we no longer attribute it to boredom. It's only when we don't really realize it, we say, oh, this task must be boring. And so if we understand exactly what is going on, I think that's the first step to not actually being bored in those circumstances.
I read about something called the Boring Conference in London for 3 years. There are lectures on things like paint drying and supermarket self-checkouts. What is this a stunt? Is there anything to be gleaned from a conference like this?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's definitely stunt-like, and I think it's very funny. I just actually learned about this just this morning. But I think there actually is some value to be gained from it, which is that nothing is inherently boring. It's all in how you frame it. And if you make this stunt-like conference, people are going to think it's funny. And they're all going to be there experiencing it together. And they're actually going to be engaged, which is the key thing, in the conference, because you're all watching these lectures. And so all of a sudden, the degrees of burnt toast, how burnt a piece of toast is amusing and is not something that would be boring in a different setting. So I think setting, engagement, that all really plays a big role.
Maria Konnikova is a journalist, and you can find the link to her Boston Globe piece on boredom on our website. Her new book will be out next year. It's called Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. We have 20 seconds. How do you think like Sherlock Holmes?
Well, actually, it's all about mindfulness and attention. It's learning to pay attention and to not just see but also observe everything that's going on around us, including your own thoughts.
That tells me the editors of the Globe paired topic and writer expertly when they had you write about boredom.
Thank you.
Sherlock Holmes talks about this. Maria, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Brian Lehrer, you know that guy. He presides over these proceedings mostly, and he will do so tomorrow. So happy joy. I'm Mike Pesca. Brian will be back tomorrow. Thank you.